So Mary and her family have been invited to a wedding in Cana. And since her oldest son is now an up-and-coming teacher, favored by John the Baptist himself, his disciples are also invited. Wedding feasts, then and now, are an opportunity to share extravagantly and to practice incredible hospitality and generosity and joy. They are an occasion for exceptional celebration. In the ancient world, however, these were also opportunities to share in the important expectations of community hospitality. All of these families came together, the women to support the bride, the men to celebrate, and the children to hear the stories of their extended aunts and uncles. But there's no more wine. Now, I think it is important for us to recognize and think about what no more wine actually means in the ancient world. So for us, if the wine runs out at a wedding, maybe we go to the cash bar at the venue, or we go to the liquor store, or maybe it's just time to stop drinking. But in the ancient world, this means something a little bit different. If the wine runs out, the families of the bride and groom have failed to provide adequate hospitality, and they incur shame. This is a sharing economy, my feast for your feast, so that we all support each other and everyone gets to eat. Additionally, in the ancient world, everyone drank wine instead of water because water was unsafe to drink and the alcohol killed the bacteria. Having no wine is about much more than having no alcohol for a party. This is about these families not having what they need to be in community with each other. This is about these families not having what they need to celebrate and to be joyful. Mary, the mother of Jesus, is a compassionate woman. And since the story tells us that she is invited, I imagine that this person is a friend or a relative or someone dear to her. She doesn't want shame to befall these families, and she wants the party to keep going. And so she goes to her son and she says, "They have no wine." What goes on between them, I think all mothers everywhere will recognize. Jesus replies, "Not our problem." And Mary, I can just picture her with her arm on her hip like this, with that deadpan look that you get when you are just going to wait for your child to make a different decision. And she turns to the servants and she says, "Do whatever he tells you." So Jesus says that the enormous, comically large stone jars for the rites of purification are to be filled up with water. The servants have to carry bucket after bucket from the town water source to fill them all. These are stone jars. They cannot be carried. Then, when all of this is done, he has the servants draw from one of them and take it to the steward, and somehow, unbelievably, this water is now choice wine. What was originally a scarcity, an emptiness, is turned into the best wine of the evening. And it is super abundant. There is more wine in these jars than it makes any kind of sense. This is like 100 boxes of wine. And it is not Franzia. This is the first of Jesus' signs because it is the frame from which all things happen in his ministry. John wants us to know that Jesus' way offers an abundance beyond all recognition. The way of Jesus is a way of celebration, of rejoicing, of delighting in a God who delights in us. But miracle stories like this one might be a little tough for us as 21st century Christians And I think that's because we often approach them like the steward in this story approaches what he has just experienced. The steward doesn't understand where this wine has come from, and so he tries to explain it. And we too often get caught up in trying to understand the rational explanation for this, or we just write it off entirely because there isn't a rational explanation. But I invite us all to suspend that need to understand for now and to simply play in the wonder of this story. I think what we're really meant to ask right now is what kind of God would do this? A miracle story is meant to make us wonder, meant to make us dream, meant to give us a portrait of this God who is so impossible to understand. Miracle stories show us how God changes the rules on us, breaks the boundaries of our understanding, so that we can begin to imagine what God's love for us is really like. These stories are meant to show us how God defies all order and all reality in order to restore us to who we are meant to be. So this miracle story, this tale of the water and the wine, I think it shows us some very important things about who God is. This story tells us that God's hope for us is that we are kept in community with one another, celebrating together, rejoicing in abundance, not cowering in scarcity and shame. In Mary and Jesus' exchange, it tells us that human community and human need and human relationships matter to God and can cause God to act. It tells us that what is empty can come up full and be transformed into something completely new. So let me ask you, where are you in this story? In your own life, what is coming up empty? Has your capacity for joy and celebration given out? Are there moments where you feel like Mary, approaching God and saying, "It's all gone"? If that is where you are right now, then I invite you to hear this story as a promise that scarcity will not win. This doesn't happen easily. Everyone has to work to fill up those jars with water. But what went into those jars is not what comes out. Our work mingles with God's work, and something impossible occurs. This story is a promise that God is among us, taking delight in us, rejoicing in and with us, and taking what we lack and turning it into something extravagantly abundant. Something we couldn't even imagine. This is a promise that we can bring our emptiness before God and come away filled with something impossible. So I invite you now into a spiritual practice, a meditation that Blair introduced to you last week for this season of Epiphany. It's an imagination exercise. It comes a little bit from Ignatian tradition. Imagine Jesus at this wedding feast. He's laughing, listening to his companions, telling stories with a calm and compassionate voice. Imagine him walking towards you, seeing you, and having a conversation with you. You could imagine that he takes both of your hands in a greeting, as if you were old friends or cousins who haven't seen each other in a long time. Feel the texture of those hands, the calluses, the weight of them, the warmth and the love and the sense of security. And there is a Celtic encircling prayer, which you could say to yourself as you imagine this. And it goes like this. I place my hands in yours, Lord. I place my will in yours, Lord. I place my heart in yours, Lord. I place my hands in yours, Lord. Amen.